first case this afternoon is case number 69749, a City of Sparks versus Reno Newspapers. Mr. Throne and Mr. Glovac. Do you want to reserve any time?
3 minutes, Your Honor.
Three? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court. Nevada Administrative Code Provision 453A.714, Subpart 1, explicitly provides that the names and other identifying information of any person who delivers medical marijuana lawfully in the state of Nevada is confidential, not subject to subpoena or discovery, and not subject to inspection by the general public. The District Court concluded that that regulation is unenforceable because the term any person and the word deliver are not sufficiently specific as to meet the standards set out in Reno Papers versus Sheriff. There are two problems with this decision. The first is that the Administrative Procedure Act imposes certain procedural prerequisites to relief in cases that challenge the applicability of state regulations. It also provides for a specific remedy at law, which is a condition that ordinarily precludes writ relief. The second problem is that the District Court's decision is a misapplication of the standard in Sheriff, because it specifically avoids the statutory definition of the term deliver, which is a definition, it's a standard that we put people in prison on in the context of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act. It avoids the ordinary meaning of the term any, and it does not account for the inclusion of the term deliver in the statutory definitions of each type of medical marijuana establishment in Chapter 453A. As to the first issue, the dispute may be distilled to this. I believe that NAC 453A 714 subpart 1 applies to the facts of this case, and my colleague does not. Chapter 239 allows for confidentiality to be stated by the legislature, by statute, or by regulation, or in some cases by balancing test. What the statute says is all public records are presumed open unless otherwise declared by law to be confidential.
See, how is that reconciled then with NRS 453A through 70, subsection 5, and then the NEC that coordinates with that?
Well, Your Honor, I think...
That's a law.
Well, that is a statute, and that is one type of law. I think if you look at this Court's holdings in public records cases, it doesn't necessarily need to be a statute. It needs to be by force of law. So that might be a balancing test. That might be a court rule, as in the case of Civil Rights versus Seniors versus the Administrative Office of the Courts. Or it could be a regulation. And this Court previously, I've been able to find only one case, and it was a federal regulation. But the court held in Reno Newspapers versus City of Reno, actually I think it's City of Reno versus Reno Newspapers, excuse me, that a federal regulation could serve to make information related to the RETRAC project confidential. I think that that's important because regulations in the state under Chapter 233B have the force of law so long as they're properly promulgated. And what that means for this case is that it puts you into the Administrative Procedures Act when you want to challenge the applicability of the regulation to the circumstances at hand. Specifically, 233B.110 requires that when you are making such a challenge, you must first ask the promulgating agency to pass upon the validity or applicability of that regulation. And if you are not satisfied by the response of the agency, then that agency is a necessary party to any subsequent litigation. That differs from most public records cases because most public records cases haven't dealt with state regulations. In fact, none have. And so where you previously used mandamus relief to deal with how to enforce the rights established by Chapter 239, you don't need to use that here because of the specific relief included in the APA.
But the declaratory relief is not coercive. They wanted an order directing production of these records. Mandamus seems to fit.
Well, I disagree, Your Honor, in that declaratory relief that finds that the regulation does not apply or is not effective would be coercive, in that the presumption is that all records are open. And so without 453A714 in effect on these circumstances, the presumption would be that they're open. And so to that end, declaratory relief would be coercive under these circumstances.
What about the newspaper's argument about 233 being inapplicable because the writ petition involves the proper interpretation of a confidentiality provision as opposed to the validity or applicability of a regulation?
First, Justice Berger, I am not certain that there is a meaningful distinction between interpretation and application in this case. I think that they are one and the same. I would also say that in Chapter 233B, it goes on beyond simple application and includes the proposed application that threatens to impair the rights of the plaintiff, and that is what we have here. We have the proposed application of a regulation that impairs the rights of the newspaper as established by Chapter 239. The second point I'd like to make with respect to that is that I think a careful reading of the briefs suggests that the newspaper is challenging the validity of the regulation. They are suggesting that NRS 453A 370 subpart 5 is not sufficiently authoritative as to confer the ability on the division to make something confidential. I think that the holding of the district court in this instance goes far enough as to invalidate the regulation from enforcement by anybody, not just the city of Sparks. And to that end, I think that the situation that we're confronted with today is that the regulation itself is at present invalid. I think that the district court erred by not following the procedures set out in 233B before making that decision. 233B110 requires that prior to making any decision as to the applicability or validity of the regulation, that the district court wait for a determination by the promulgating agency. That didn't occur in this case, and because of that, I think we're here unnecessarily. The distinction between mandamus and the APA in this case is that the APA exists because the regulations are more malleable than the statute, right? You go through it and you ask the promulgating agency whether or not the proposed application fits with the intention of the agency. And the agency has a much easier time changing those regulations than the legislature would have changing the statutes. To that end, the APA is set up specifically to avoid unnecessary litigation. This court was previously confronted with the problem of there being two apparent paths forward, whether through the APA or through some other form of relief in a case involving the Department of Taxation. In Southern California Edison versus the First Judicial District Court, what the court said was, under the tax provisions, it appears that you are entitled to a trial de novo. However, because the specific type of action wasn't spelled out in the statute, the Administrative Code or the Administrative Procedure Act took over because it specifically spells out an action for judgment. In this case, prior to a contested administrative case, we're ahead of the game on the judicial review side, but 233B110 specifically spells out an action for declaratory relief and is analogous to this case. With respect to the second issue, the narrow interpretation required of exemption and exceptions to the public records law does not foreclose on the legislature approving a broad class of protection. The newspaper has...
But didn't we say in Sheriff it needs to be express and unequivocal? And they did that with regard to the University of Nevada School of Medicine, attending physicians and people who hold registry identification cards. But they didn't do that with respect to licensees, business licensees.
The way I read, Sheriff, Your Honor, what the court has said is that the exception needs to be spelled out specifically. I do not read
expressly, Expressly
and unequivocally. I do not read, Sheriff, as to require that that express and unequivocal declaration take the form of a statute. And so while it is inarguable that the legislature, when they originally passed laws related to medical marijuana, made certain aspects of the university program and doctors who wrote prescriptions and patients who held medical marijuana cards confidential under the statutory scheme, when they came back in 2013 and pushed the Department of Health and Human Services and the Division of Public and Behavioral Health to write the regulations that form the framework of the medical marijuana economy, they included in 453A 370 subpart 5 a direction that, as far as possible, while maintaining accountability, that the names and identifying information of those persons who deliver or facilitate services under the authority of that chapter be protected. And what the promulgating agency did in response to that direction was adopt a regulation that says as much, that says the names and identifying information of these people are confidential, are not subject to disclosure, they're not subject to subpoena or discovery, and they're not subject to inspection by the general public. And so I do think that the plain language of the regulation is unequivocal, and it is express, and it takes the form of law in Nevada. The word person is defined by statute. The word deliver is defined by statute. It means the actual and constructive or attempted transfer of a controlled substance from one person to another. The term controlled substance is defined. We know from Schedule 1 that marijuana is a Schedule 1 controlled substance. The term medical marijuana is defined, and there is no express differentiation between marijuana and medical marijuana in the statutes. And we know that the term deliver is included in every statutory definition for every type of medical marijuana establishment allowed by law. The plain language evinces an obvious, express, and unequivocal declaration of confidentiality. By invalidating the regulation without following the procedures set forth in the APA, the district court has, I think, created an issue whereby the state has been cut out of the process. Other agencies who are affected by this decision have not been allowed to participate, and the judgment of the district court should be reversed.
Could you offer any elucidation on what would be the purpose in making confidential a business license's identity? Your plain language approach really doesn't take into account what they're getting at, what they're trying to protect. And the word services also gives me pause in your argument. It's deliver services.
Of course. Justice Pickering, it does not state in the record, and the legislative history is of no help on that issue, but if you're asking for my opinion, it's that you are essentially regulating an industry that involves the sale of highly potent versions of common street drugs, and it's an all-cash business where the proceeds of the sales cannot be deposited into a bank. And so when you publish or allow the names of the people who participate in that industry to be made public, you are making them targets for crime.
Well, if you drive by a dispensary and it says Joe Blow's Dispensary on the outside of the door, how's that protection being advanced?
Your Honor, to the extent...
Seems a little bit incongruous that we would have somebody sign on the door. I don't know if they have or don't. Haven't been by there, but I suspect that, like many businesses, they've got an address or sign on the door. But Well, we're not going to tell you who they are.
Well, I think my argument is more to the individual and less to the business itself, Your Honor. And so, to the extent Joe Blow, in your example, would have been the actual individual who was licensed to operate the business, Joe Blow still has to go home. He still has a...
Oh, so the LLC number name or the DBA name could be disclosed, but not the individual?
In my view, that's correct, Your Honor.
Where would you get that in this construct of the language here?
Well, I think you'll find a footnote in my opening brief that references an AT&T case where the Supreme Court of the United States determined...
Oh, I'm talking about the language in the statute.
I interpreted the language in the statute, Your Honor, as a person being an individual who could be the subject of crime. Now, whether a business itself could be broken into, could be exploited, certainly that is the case, but the security systems and the security measures put in place at the medical marijuana facilities, as required by the regulatory structure, are far more significant than would be undertaken at a home.
If confidentiality of the individuals wasn't contemplated, what's the purpose of NRS 453 and NAC 453?
I'm afraid I don't understand your question.
The NRS and the NAC both reference confidentiality as to the individual. And why would those be there if that wasn't intended?
My thought on the reason the legislature directed the division to promulgate a regulation related to confidentiality is because as they work through the framework on how to set up the economy, you'll find that the individual owners of these businesses go through one vetting process. The ordinary day-to-day workers, the cashiers, the people who actually work in the cultivation facilities, they go through another. And I'm not certain that it was immediately obvious during the legislative session how it was going to shake out in terms of who was participating and in what capacity and how they would be regulated by the state. And so rather than put themselves in a hole, as the legislature did in Sheriff, by passing a law that perhaps was not as specific as they intended, what they did was say, all right, well, we'll wait and we'll allow the regulatory agency to determine how best to deal with the confidentiality aspect of this once they've determined how they're going to license these businesses and the people who work in them.
Thank you.
Who would be excluded from your definition of deliver services?
In terms of who participates in the
economy?
Sure. No one. No
one. So how does that maximize accountability to the extent possible?
Well, Your Honor, I think, first of all, while I certainly appreciate the argument from the newspaper, I don't read the maximizing accountability provision in the statute directing this action as providing accountability necessarily to the public. If you look in subsections 2 and 3, there's interagency governmental sharing of this information for the purposes of law enforcement. And to the extent the accountability aspect of it is at issue, there are two points. And the first is that while we read 239 as maximizing accountability of the government to the public, that requirement is almost certainly abrogated by the regulation when it says it's not subject to inspection by the general public. And that regulation was approved by the Legislative Commission and is the law of the state. The second, Your Honor, is that whether or not we think that this regulation is wise or that we think that this regulation is the best manner in which to deal with this problem, that is a question for the legislature. It is a question for the Division of Public and Behavioral Health, and it is not a question for us today.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
Over. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, counsel, I'm Scott Bergamack, attorney for the Winnipeg Gazette Journal in this case. I was going to with the court's permission, initially address the appropriate remedial mechanism or procedural mechanism. But before I do that, I wanted to respond quickly to Justice Pickering's last question as followed up by Justice Hardesty by saying that there is no high ground for secrecy here. And the real incongruity to me, or the bigger incongruity to me, is that you have individuals who couldn't wait. They were stacked up trying to get into this industry. There were far more applications to own and run MMEs, medical marijuana establishments, than there were slots available. And so you had a lot of folks, and I'm not criticizing the industry at all, but you had a lot of people interested in getting into the industry. They saw it as, and it may very well turn out to be, a very profitable venture. And so they want to get into the industry, make money, do well by it, but they don't want you to know who they are. To me, that's the incongruity here. There is no reason for secrecy. This is really just a technical kind of analysis now of the law as to whether secrecy exists without any underlying reason that gives rise to it. None at all. With that having been said, I wanted to comment on the procedural part of this. What is the appropriate mechanism? The bottom line for the city is that what they're really saying to the court is that you can't have mandamus, which is what the Reno Gazette Journal selected here, if there's an adequate remedy at law. And their argument is that under the Administrative Procedure Act, there's an adequate remedy at law, a deck action. And so mandamus was inappropriate here. Now, they understand that the decisions of this court going way back have all verified or validated mandamus as the appropriate mechanism. That's always been the mechanism for a public records fight. So confronting that headwind, the city had to come up with some way around it. You heard it here today, and where I really first saw it was in the reply brief. And the argument was made that in all of this court's prior decisions where mandamus was affirmed as the appropriate way to adjudicate a public records proceeding, a statute was at issue. Now, there was one case, the City of Reno case, that involved a federal regulation, but that regulation and the statute that gave rise to it were incorporated by reference into the Nevada statute that was issued in that case. So they're right. All prior cases did involve a statute. This case involves an administrative regulation. But the result that they get to is not correct, and what I want to point out to the court, and this is what came to me in looking at the report, is Chapter 3 of the Declaratory Judgment Act provides the precise same remedy of declaratory relief when there's an issue over the interpretation or application of a statute. And I would point the court to NRS 30.040, which reads in part, any person interested under a deed, et cetera, or whose rights, status, or other legal relations are affected by a statute, may have determined any question of construction or validity arising under the statute is declared for perfection.
Why was not the state made a party?
The state, in a mandamus action, Your Honor, which is how we elected to proceed here, neither the state nor any division of it is required to be made a party.
I understand that, but based upon what you read saying they're synonymous, why is not the state the party? Well, their regulation is not the city's regulation.
What I'm saying, Your Honor, is in a situation where a statute is at issue, debt relief is just as available as it is in an administrative
regulation. I understand, but my colleagues have been asking questions about why this.
Right.
The city didn't create the administrative code.
I understand.
The state did.
Right.
So if we're going to the inapplicability of that regulation, shouldn't the party who made that regulation be present so they can at least attempt to answer it, if they can in fact answer.
Can I address, Your Honor, the right that's available under 233B as a way of answering your question under 110? What that regulation says, Your Honor, is that declaratory relief action under the regulation must follow the form of Chapter 30, the Declaratory Relief Act. And if you look at that, the Declaratory Relief Act tells you who the parties are. And it doesn't stop at a state agency. When declaratory relief is sought, all persons shall be made parties who have any claim or who have or claim any interest which would be affected by the declaration, and no declaration shall prejudice the rights of persons not parties to the proceeding. So if you take their argument to its logical extension, it isn't just the state, Your Honor, that should be made a party. It should be every other agency that issues MME business licenses.
Well, so are you, in fact, shortcutting by attempting to do what you do by just moving them aside, those parties that have maybe the first-line vested interest?
Well, what we're doing, Your Honor, is recognizing that in a public records case, to require this form of process to go through the Administrative Procedures Act, and by the way, I don't know if all interested agencies could even be sued in Nevada, or in Washoe County, Nevada. I don't know that. If Clark County issues business licenses for MMEs in the city of Las Vegas for the city of Henderson, can Clark County be joined in a Las Vegas or in a Reno, Nevada declaratory?
Well, I'm just looking at the practical effect of this. You're asking them not to enforce a state law, but they're the not, or state or regulation, but they're not the maker of this regulation. And so the party who's made it, you're just cutting out.
No, what I'm asking, Your Honor, is that this court's precedent that mandamus is the appropriate mechanism for addressing the public records dispute be affirmed. Because if we put it into the declaratory relief arena, you can see what it does. I mean, a couple of years ago, Your Honor, as an example, this court decided the Reno Gazette Journal versus PERS case. At the time, there were 46,000 recipients of PERS benefits. If you accept that debt relief is the way to proceed, and anyone with an interest in the outcome of the action must be named or not bound, imagine the difficulty of getting a public records case on through the debt relief mechanism. So what I'm saying, Your Honor, is the wisdom of this court has been that mandamus, where it is the requesting member of the public or the media entity and the government agency that possesses the documents, they join the fight. And I would say this as well, that in the public records context, whatever the agency thought, and I was interested in Mr. Thornley's use of the word regulations are malleable, they can be quickly changed, or they may have different meanings, and I think maybe amoeba-like might be a better term than malleable. But in a public records case, the inquiry is really simple, and that is, does the provision at issue, by its terms, provide an express, unequivocal declaration of confidentiality? It's not a fact-finding mission as to what hearings the agency held, what the agency thought when it drafted the regulation the way it drafted it. The question is a simple one of looking at the language. The agency adds nothing to the process by being in the mandamus action. Mr. Thornley and his office have done a fine job in this case of advancing the position for confidentiality, and they've done it looking at the language. And so I just think, Your Honor, that if there's any consideration of moving the appropriate procedural mechanism over into debt relief from mandamus, that unleashes a lot of problems, not the least of which is it really puts a heavy weight on public records cases. They're adjudicated quickly now. We've gotten quickly before this court in this case because we didn't have to go to the agency and ask them to clarify language that we could read, and then institute a deck action and potentially name the city of Reno, Washoe County, Humboldt County, Elko County, and every other entity that might be interested and that wouldn't be bound by Judge Freeman's decision if they weren't before the court. So, Your Honor, as I say, it's just what we're advocating here is to stick with the precedent. Let's keep these kinds of disputes in the mandamus setting. And all we're ever doing in these anyway, if there's no Donray balancing test fight, which there isn't in this case, we're just looking at a legal provision and asking ourselves, is that provision within it, does it contain an express unequivocal declaration of confidentiality? Which is, if there are no further questions on procedure and mechanism, I wanted to address that in my remaining time. This court, in all of its public records cases, most of them, has indicated that there are two ways to get to confidentiality. One would be the express unequivocal statutory declaration of confidentiality. The other is a Donray balancing test. We don't have that here. Although you heard Mr. Thornley kind of reference it in response to one of the questions from the bench, and it's in their briefs that, well, this is a dangerous industry, and maybe they're going to be singled out for some sort of extra attention from bad guys. That's kind of what he was saying. We hear that from time to time in public records cases, but that there's no evidence of that. There was no particularized showing. It's all just hypothetical, and so that doesn't implicate a Donray analysis in this case. So we're down to, is there a statutory declaration of confidentiality? The only statute that could possibly apply here, as referenced by Justice Perugieri, is the 453A3705 statute. And that statute, and I can, let me just read it, since it seems to be the principal statute at issue here, really the only one at issue. What it says is, as far as possible, while maintaining accountability, protect the identity and personal identifying information of each person who receives, facilitates, or delivers services in accordance with this chapter. That's something that the legislature is telling the administrative agency to promulgate a regulation relative to. That statute itself is not a declaration of confidentiality for anything. It does not pronounce confidentiality. It does not say the following records or things are confidential and shall not be released. At most, it's a directive to an agency. Even if it were considered, however, as some form of a quasi-declaration of confidentiality, the introductory phrase renders it equivocal, makes it the epitome of equivocation. As far as possible while maintaining accountability, that's standardless. I mean, this isn't second-guessing on my part, it's just that's standardless. There's nothing in it that actually is equivocal or unequivocal, which is what is required by the law for a declaration of confidentiality. Beyond that, so not only is it not a declaration of confidentiality and not an unequivocal one, NRS 239-0101, which is the key provision of the Public Records Act, actually lists every confidentiality statute in the Nevada Revised Statutes, and this one isn't one of them. But two of them are from this chapter 453A, and they were alluded to by Justice Hardesty. There's a statute, confidentiality for information and results. The University of Nevada is doing some kind of study of the efficacy of medical marijuana. That stuff is confidential. And then any attending physician, and this is one who would allow a patient the prescription, if you want to call it that, for medicinal marijuana, that identity is confidential under a statute. And then the holder of a registry card.
I think if you had just the statute, you'd be home free. The problem is the second sentence of the regulation, which states that these are confidential. So are you saying that this regulation transcends the permissible scope of what was delegated to the agency to do? What's your argument for why that, or that the Public Records Act doesn't apply to regulations like this for some reason? What's the precise argument, or do you have a textual one? Why?
Well, I mean, the textual arguments are laid out in the briefs, and I can get to those, but basically two points, Your Honor. One is that I think it's an undisputed principle of law that regulations have to conform to the statutes that give rise to them. So our argument is that you must take this regulation and you have to interpret it in accordance with any express declaration of confidentiality in 453A.
So you're saying it exceeds the bounds of what the agency was delegated to do?
It's so vague it's hard to say if it exceeds the bounds. What I'm saying is just interpret it consistent with the express declarations of confidentiality that are in the statute, and we know what those are. In terms of names, they're just for opinion.
I mean, you could make an argument that only statutes can confer confidentiality for purposes of public records, but that's not what you're arguing.
Well, you can make that argument. The problem with that, Your Honor, is that regulations that are, you know, duly enacted, I think, are typically considered to have the force of law. And so I don't want to mislead
the court. So you're not making that argument?
No, I'm not making that argument. I don't want to mislead the court there. But what I am saying is that the regulation itself can't create confidentiality. It has to come from something within the statute that gives birth to the regulation so that you interpret the regulation consistent with the statute. And then textually, you asked about that. It's just a vague statute. Or vague regulation, I'm sorry. It doesn't specifically identify any category expressly and unequivocally for which confidentiality is, on whom confidentiality is being conferred. So for those two reasons, Your Honor, give it a narrow construction, which the Public Records Act requires anyway. Give it a narrow construction, and then second, even looking at the language itself and the terms that Mr.
How would you give it a narrow construction, this regulation?
Because
No, how would you? What would it apply to?
It would apply to attending physicians, and it would apply to holders of registry identification cards. Now, I understand...
Well, I guess a physician might be delivering services, but a holder of a registration card is not facilitating or delivering services. So it wouldn't even literally apply to the...
I think receives is in there as well, Your Honor.
I don't think so, but yeah.
Well...
Chiklogovac perhaps would cover employees who work in these facilities, people who aren't necessarily a business license holder. My concern here is the newspaper requested the names of the business license holder.
Correct, Your Honor.
So it would seem that this provision here should unequivocally and expressly state that it's protecting the business license holder. It would appear as though it at least does that much, doesn't it?
That it protects the names of the business license holders alone, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And I don't, once again, I think the regulation, first of all, has to be interpreted within the confines of the statutory structure that gives rise to it. And then secondarily, no. I mean, the whole purpose of doing an administrative regulation, as I understand it, would be to be more specific than what the statute allows and enumerate what's confidential: name, address, social security number, bank account information, that sort of thing, beyond just identifying information, which is mentioned.
Well, if the business license holder's name is available through other sources, such as their DBA at the county, or the LLC name at the Secretary of State's office, or the front of their building, then it sounds like protecting their name in this form under this regulation isn't necessary to advance anybody's accountability.
I would agree with that.
Anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Cooper.
Thank you, Ron.
You're out of time. Sorry. I want to court thanks both attorneys for their arguments. It's a challenging case for us, and this matter will stand submitted.